Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bon. We are still glowing in the aftermath of UFC 318. I am still here in New Orleans, Louisiana. In fact, I am at Dustin Poirier's residence, not his actual home, but where he was staying throughout fight week. And we are going to digest the aftermath of Saturday's event, where he fell short in his retirement fight against Max Holloway. A thrilling battle, an epic battle, a great fight between those two. Once again, Dustin had his moments, Max had his moments. He came out with the victory and that BMF belt. But of course, Max deserves all his praise. He is going to get that. He is going to move forward in his career. But today, we need to focus on everything Dustin Poirier did, his contributions to the sport, what everyone felt about what happened throughout this week. And in order to do that, we're going to have some great guests on, multiple people here. We're going to have Dustin's teammates, some friends, some training partners, and of course, Dustin Poirier himself to reflect on everything that happened throughout the week on Saturday, what the future holds for him, how he feels about his retirement, and just everything you want to touch on in regards to that. So this is a special episode. I will say that had to stick around New Orleans a little longer and spend some time with Poirier, and can't thank him enough. Can't thank his people enough for allowing me to come hang out and chat and reflect on his career and the retirement and all that stuff. So just sit back, enjoy this one. It is a great episode. Please make sure to like, rate, subscribe, follow, all that stuff on audio or video. It means a lot. This is the type of content I hope to continue to bring you guys moving forward. So here we go. The Bonfire is here. It is a Dustin Poirier tribute episode. Enjoy.
We're here now with Mike Brown as we reflect on Dustin Poirier's retirement night, retirement fight, retirement week. Mike, I know only been a few hours since, but how have you digested everything since last night, Saturday night?
It's been a long journey, but a little bittersweet. I'm glad that it was an exciting competitive fight and nobody got, really hurt. So that's always a plus. And, Dustin has a tremendous career to look back upon. It was beautiful.
What is the thing that, like, when someone asks you about this week or last night, that you think will be the first thing that comes to your mind when you're doing these interviews a few years from now and people ask you about this week?
I mean, I don't know. Like, obviously, we always have a great time, all the guys together. Like, every time is almost like a little mini vacation. We have playing games, the guys, it brings us all together. Every time we get a big Airbnb and always enjoy ourselves. I think fight-wise was the fact where, like, Dustin got hurt really bad early on, and then Dustin's style battled back and then hurt Max, and you thought, oh my god, he's doing it again. So there was some drama in the fight, which made it exciting, and I thought it was a competitive fight and an exciting fight. So I mean, that's what I'll remember most.
What was going through your mind when he rocked him in round two at the end there?
I was like, I mean, is somebody involved in this? Yeah, I'm not normally like a religious guy, but I was starting to think like, this is insane, especially when he jumped the guillotine and it looked kind of tight. I'm like, he might get this. Yeah. And something is involved here. Like, if he submits him right now, this couldn't be crazier. And he had he had a shot at it. He had rocked him and he had a good bite on the neck. It was in the realm of possibility, and damn, that would have been insane.
Yeah, it was so loud in there, like, and obviously such a crazy moment, everyone screaming. Could you even poach in that moment?
No, or like... no. I mean, I think at that point, they didn't hear the bell. Yeah. So that round went, like, a little bit too long, a few seconds, but the bell went off. I looked with clock was zero. They're still fighting.
Yeah.
It was chaos.
Yeah. That's got to be up there with the... wildest moments, right? Just like it was that fire end to everything. There's so much stuff. I mean, like Japan, things like that.
With Dustin, I've seen so many of those moments, but it's like those main card or main event pay-per-view fights is deafening. The crowd gets so loud and so crazy, you can't communicate. It's they're on their own out there. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the case with a lot of big fights on like a main card pay-per-view.
Yeah.
obviously when Dustin came to the press conference, he kind of said that like he thought it was 2-2, and you kind of felt that way as well. I know you guys watched it back. What's your perspective now?
Yeah, I mean, during the fight, you know, I thought it was close. I thought, you know, when a round is close, I know that it's hard to judge. And I also thought, you know, maybe with the crowd cheering for him, some of these close ones he might get. You know, I thought it possibly could be 2-2 going into the last round. I wasn't sure it was, you know. It also could have been, you know, 1-3, but I thought it could be 2-2.
I don't think that's crazy. I thought as well, sitting there cage side, that he got 2-4. And again, I haven't had the luxury of watching it back, so I don't know what else you might say here. But to me, sitting there on press row, it felt like a lot of Max's punches were hitting his arms and he was blocking like a lot of stuff in there. Obviously, they both landed great stuff multiple times, many times, but that's how I kind of felt. And then I do think, especially that last second exchange, Max definitely like solidified.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's exactly what I thought. I thought it was 2-4 that he could have got. Mm-hmm. But what was interesting, the scorecards, like some judges gave him some rounds, but they're all different rounds. So it just showed the rounds were close enough where they could go either way, these rounds, mm-hmm. right? So it's all a bit subjective and you kind of never know who's going to get them. But they were close enough where people, each round was close enough where, not all of them, but most of the rounds were close enough where they could have gone either way. Although, I think it was 4. I thought what happened was he did really well in the beginning. He came out strong. And for the first like 2.5-3 minutes, he was looking good and throwing a lot of volume, but he kind of slowed down and stopped throwing for the last like minute and a half, which hurt him. Like, this is me looking back at it. Cause the end always weighs heavy, right? That's kind of when you're making up your mind, who's going to win the round. And I think he kind of let off the gas pedal a little bit. Maybe he had fatigued a little bit or something, you know, just
in the body so many freaking times. I know he was in insane shape, but I mean, I'd never been in that. It's got a...
You hear that all the time, like all these... In my experience, they either hurt you or they don't. And if they don't, they're nothing. Like, that's how I've always felt. And I haven't been hurt to the body, honestly, like many times. Never in a fight. But people say that, but if it doesn't really hurt you, I think those are almost, they don't hurt you at all. That's nothing, you know, it doesn't give you any damage. I mean, it can, if you're not like ready for it, if you're not flexed or if it hits you in the right spot, I mean, it could be crippling, but if it's not that, I don't think it's sometimes as big as people make it out to be.
Right, like everyone has that off button on the liver, but some these are
exactly
way smaller or something.
Yeah, right. It can like, it's either going to hurt you or not. And if it's not, it's pretty much as nothing. It's like getting punched in the thigh. That's my feeling on the situation.
I love that insight. I haven't really heard anyone say that. So yeah. We're learning here.
I mean, this my opinion. I don't know. That's my experience.
No, I mean, when I think you got hit like over 100 times in the body or something like that, if that doesn't put you down, that's probably goes to show that he fell into that category.
Yes. So, yeah. No, he was fine.
Yeah. Was Max, I know we all know he's so good, so I don't want to say better than you thought, but like when you're studying his Getchi fight, his Topuria fight, like did he show up?
We knew. I knew he was going to be good. We knew he was going to be tough. I mean, he's grown a lot. He's added a lot more variety to his game. He's like a lot of the spinning back kicks and things like this. This is all newer stuff that he's using. He was really elusive. He moved his feet very well. A lot more side-to-side movement this time, right? Which I think was giving Dustin problems, like finding the range and landing shots on him. I think that was, you know, the biggest difference and what made him so hard to hit.
Yeah. So the career's over now. Like, I'm sure you're going to get asked so many times about your favorite memories and stuff like that. Is there one that your go-to answer would be?
There's two really big ones, you know. One was him winning the interim belt.
Yeah.
I mean, that felt like a world title. You know, it certainly did. It like, he'd beaten Max Holloway.
Who was a champion at the time.
And it was on a monster win streak, yep. Right? How many fights was it?
13.
So he's on a, this world champion is on a 13-fight win streak. Very difficult fight, very tough fight for a belt. Mm-hmm. This is a world title, right? So that was pretty damn big. And
no, on that fight too, for people like, people like to say like Max came in on short notice from featherweight. That was short notice for Dustin-ish too, right? Like neither of them got a full camp.
Around. I don't remember the exact how long.
It wasn't crazy. Like they didn't get 11 weeks or something. Like
okay. Yeah.
I think they announced that less than 2 months out from the event. So.
Okay. But I don't think it was a crazy short notice, like a under 4 weeks or anything.
No, not for either of them. Though.
Yeah. It was.
I'm just saying.
It was, I think it was a decent camp for both guys.
Even playing field, but yeah, number two, I guess.
And number two, I think was the second Conor fight. You know, there was, I mean, Conor is the biggest star the sport's ever seen. And, you know, they had history. And, you know, that weighed heavy on Dustin. And it was damn nice to get that one back, you know. And it really propelled Dustin to another level as far as fans and things like this. And that was, a beautiful night in Abu Dhabi. It was a long build up. We were stuck in Abu Dhabi for a couple of weeks because of the COVID and quarantining and all that jazz. So it was
cars going around.
Yeah, you know the deal.
It was chaos.
Right. But so that was, it was a lot of pressure on Dustin, right? Like, and he'd been knocked out by the guy before. So let's, you know, dang, man, this guy hits hard. You know, I don't know about this. It's a lot of pressure on a guy. And if you're down two, you know, that's, there's no doubt about it. You know,
Max had come in.
He was better. Yeah, that's true. He'd be
fortunate to get a third fight.
Right. Very rare. Very rarely. Very, very rarely. But no, I think those are my my two favorite moments.
Yeah. And I guess like for you, obviously, all the focus is on Dustin. He's the athlete. He's retiring. But like, you're not going to have him in the gym to go through these camps anymore. Like you're retiring from this element as well, right? Like the relationship. As an active fighter with him, I'm sure you'll be friends for life, all that type of stuff. But is that a tough thing for you to think about as well?
I mean, I don't think so much about that because he'll be back. I mean, not as a fighter, but he has said many times already, like, hey, anytime, anybody who's fighting a southpaw, let me know. I'll come help him. You know, I'll fly back. And he's always been like that. He's a guy that he likes. I think he does best when he comes in the gym and he's happy and he's kind of playing around. Yeah. He's a monster when he's like that, honestly. And he's always come back to the gym and, you know, helped any guy that needed as a sparring partner, training partner, whether, you know, you need orthodox southpaw, whatever, he'll do it all. He actually enjoys that. He enjoys helping guys. So I don't think it'll be too long till he's back at ATT. Helping somebody out for a fight.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you said that since the beginning, right? He still wants to be attached. And it's kind of like the George St. Pierre thing, right? Like you said, like, I'm going to be a mixed martial artist for my entire life. This isn't it's a career built within a lifelong passion or whatever hobby, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good way to keep yourself in shape for general health, right? And, you know, like light sparring, playing around, grappling, things like this is... much better than running miles or lifting weights, right? It's more fun. You're having a good time and you're keeping your knives sharp. You know, this is fun. And the sport's evolving, so it's good to keep up with the sport, you know, keep updated. And that's what he'll do.
Yeah.
And I look forward to it.
For sure. And before we let you go, obviously, a bit of a tough weekend, right? Overall, like, you know, a Mark
terrible.
Thought, you know,
terrible weekend.
Side of the night, but. You know, it's, and you might say that when I bring it up, but like your success at American Top Team is so normalized, right? That like a blimp feels like a terrible weekend. But
yeah,
what you talked to Johnny, like I'm sure that was real tough for you not being able to.
Really hard.
And Johnny Eblen, obviously.
Yeah, Johnny Eblen, undefeated world champion. Yeah. He was just like 17-0, I believe. Mm-hmm. You know, lost his first fight in a fight that he was. I think it was clearly 3-1 going into the fifth, and literally with 10 seconds left, you know, he got reversed and submitted. You know, it was rough. I mean, that's the fight game. That's what makes it so exciting and so beautiful that anyone can win at any time. And that's what happened. But you know, it's cliche, but you know, Johnny will be much stronger coming back. And, you know, we look forward to getting back with him and getting back to work and getting his belt back.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how I might explore other options for him career-wise. Haven't noticed, but yeah, it's always interesting when they take their first loss. But that's one where you should not be beating yourself too bad up, right? Like, he was winning the fight.
I believe
of inches, as they say.
Yes, I believe he's the best middleweight in the world. You know, and any organization. You know, I believe that 100% with all my heart. And we see a lot of crossover at ATT, right? We see all the guys, right? We see UFC versus Bellator versus PFL versus KSW, but you know, Ryzen, you name it. We see we see it all. So I think this guy's the best middleweight in the world.
Yeah. And just last thing to circle back on Dustin, how like do you get over an emotional hangover like this, right? Like, it's been such a week, but I don't know, are you cornering someone next weekend and wherever, or their weekend
after? You know, honestly, thank God I'm, yeah, no, it is. It's a roller coaster. I was actually supposed to go to Abu Dhabi with Mofsar. But, you know, this is not happening. Yeah, you know, so yeah. A little rest, and, you know, that's, I mean, everything happens for a reason, and that's okay. We have more time to prepare, and he'll be ready.
Yeah, that'll be a good one. He's looking good for Pico, though, when that was.
Yeah, no, he's a monster. He actually didn't do his camp this time at ATT. Mm-hmm. He was in Thailand, right? Before that, he had some religious obligations he had to do, so he was kind of stuck over in that part of the country. But I mean, he's ATT, you know, through and through, yeah. And he'll be back at the gym, and maybe that's what, you know, maybe that's the reason it had to happen. Like, maybe, you know, he needed to be at ATT for this fight, you know, maybe some sort of intervention. And I look forward to it. Well, I mean, I think that's like these guys are both capable of being champion and are very close to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see what happens. Any before I let you, any last words on Dustin and just the whole experience of being with him, or this week, or do we cover it all?
What a ride, man. One of the most exciting, baddest dudes to ever do it. So many records, or top two or three. I mean, this guy is got one of the best resumes, fought some of the toughest guys of anybody that's ever competed in the sport, and done it in style and very violent and brutal. And he's a special athlete, and he'll never be replicated.
Yeah, an example in so many ways, showing how to retire is like a final example here, right? When knowing when to walk away, all that type of stuff.
I love it. I'm so glad he did it like he did. He didn't hang on too long, right? And it was beautiful. It didn't go his way, but still, it was, you know, Max is a great guy and a great fighter, so it would all worked out.
For sure. Awesome. Well, we will remember this week for many, many years, the lifetime to come, Mike. I appreciate it, as always.
Yeah, thanks, Adam.
Here now with the man most of you probably know through Dustin Poirier's social media and posts is Pablito. Pablito, man, so glad to have you here, obviously, during Dustin's final fight week. What have been your biggest memories and takeaways from this week? If someone, you know, asks you some months down the line, reflect on Dustin's retirement week, what's going to stand out to you most, do you think?
From this week specifically, you know, just seeing the amount of people that, you know, I come over here, I see people all from Lafayette.
Mm-hmm.
It's like looking around and, you know, it's like if I had stopped at a store in Lafayette, like it's just all people that I know, you know, from high school and from growing up in the city.
Mm.
You can tell that, you know, it's he's the face of the city in every way.
Yeah.
You know, he represents everything Lafayette's for, fighting the good fight, you know, never backing down, never staying down. Whatever he brings to the table, you know, he's going to give you all of him every time.
Mm-hmm. How did you first meet him?
In the gym. Started training at Gladiators Academy 2014 or 15. Dustin would be in and out. He lived in Florida full time at the time. He'd come back to Gladiators, whichever year his daughter was born, maybe 16 or 17, he moved back to Lafayette full time. And then after that, we kind of just hit it off, stayed close.
Yeah. I mean, for you, obviously, like as someone who's probably younger, like probably knew who he was, like you said, Lafayette, he speaks for it so loudly. Like, it was almost surreal, like to kind of build the bond that you guys have over these years.
Yeah, absolutely. The first time I watched Dustin fight on TV was the first time he fought Max, which was Max's debut.
Yeah.
And I was a fan. And then he'd come in and I'd be, you know, try not to be starstruck because we're training on the same mats, but in a lot of ways you can't help but, you know, be blown away by just the amount of work he puts in, you know, even at these small practices where it just might be local fighters, guys who are just training for a hobby, guys who are training to stay in shape. He's given it his all and he's shown the right way to do things, no matter, you know, what the stakes are. If there's lights, cameras, no lights, no cameras, just me and him, you know, it doesn't matter. He's always carried the same style. You know, he's always all of Dustin.
Yeah, I've had the fortune to see him so many times in that American Top Team training room, which is obviously like the highest of the high level fighters and a crazy environment, but haven't had the fortune of being in that gym there where it's like completely kind of a different scene and he's big fish, I guess. What's that like, kind of just seeing him in that environment where I guess he's like, everyone looks up to him at ATT as well, but it's, I'm sure, a different level there.
Yeah, for sure it is. Dustin is obviously the face of Lafayette and guys that come in and out. You know, he's an idol to everybody in the city, but if you walked into any given practice at Gladiators Academy, Dustin could be there and he's training like, you know, he's an 0-0 amateur ready to make his debut. You know, it doesn't matter who he's working with. You know, I fought at flyweight and bantamweight and he's a 55er, a solid, legit 55er. He could be training with guys like me, you know, much smaller. He could be training with heavyweights. He could be training with somebody who's their first day. As humble as it gets, you know, Dustin keeps it real.
Yeah, and just to see, like, obviously he was responsible for bringing this event to New Orleans, but to hear, like, Dana White post-fight being like, this could be a city we frequent every year or something, like, what would that do for the scene here for MMA to have, like, a UFC event here every 1 to 2 years going forward, just based off what he did in bringing this here and then showing the UFC what the city can do for the sport?
Yeah, I'm not from New Orleans. You know, I can't speak for this city.
Yeah.
But Louisiana, there's a real fight culture. We got Brendan Allen. We got Matt Schnell. AJ Fletcher fought in the UFC. He's out of our gym.
Carly Jujitsu.
Yeah. Beautiful win. Yeah. Dominated that girl and then finished her. Tony Kelly, Andrea Lee. You know, there's a ton of guys. Alan Jobin, our head coach, Tim Crater. A ton of guys have been through UFC and guys that are still in the UFC, still active. And then there's a ton of up-and-comers out of our gym that I promise you, you'll see in the UFC. There's a real fight culture in Louisiana. And if you look at it per capita, we might have the most UFC fighters out of anywhere. So I think there's no reason not to come back and give it back to this state.
What did you think of the fight with him and Max? Was it obviously, we would have liked, you know, liked to see him win everything, but, you know, it almost feels inconsequential, the result, as we sit here, like, you know, the day after, a couple of days after, he performed well. It was such a great moment. But the fight itself, like, what were you thinking, what was going on, especially when he got that knockdown in the second round?
Yeah, I haven't, I didn't watch it back, but I know live I had it 2-2 going into the fifth. I did think Max probably stole the fifth. You know, regardless, he went out on a shield. He went out like a warrior. You know, a real Rocky Balboa story. And I'm glad he jumped the ghillie instead of trying to finish Max at the end of the second. I would rather him do that every time before trying to get him out of there.
How many, I don't know if you've seen the video, he choked me out with the ghillie at American Top Team a few months ago. How many times has he got you with it?
He's got me with a ton, but it's to the point where him and I both know what we're looking for.
Okay.
So anytime we wrestle, it's just a ghillie.
You're not dumb enough to not tap like me.
Oh yeah. I'm getting out of there as soon as it's locked in. Believe it or not, he can say what he wants, but I may or may not have gotten him at some point before.
Okay. We'll try to verify that one. And just lastly here, and I appreciate this. What's your favorite Dustin Poirier memory, whether it's personal outside of the cage or something inside the cage or one of each, if you got him?
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton in the cage. Dustin's cornered me for a ton of my fights. He's always looked out for me. But something that's not just a specific moment, but just kind of overall, that I've never really expressed to Dustin, me and him, but I would like to let him know that, dude, I'm from a place called Cal Island, Louisiana. I went to high school in Abbeville, Louisiana. I'm a very small town. And there's no reason for Dustin to look out for a guy like me, you know, in the way that he has. I have a key to his gym. He's had me over to his house. We work out all the time when he's home. We run miles together. He corners me for my fights, wraps my hands. He's looked out for me in a lot of ways that, you know, he doesn't gain anything from dedicating time to me, you know, not in the way that I gain from those moments I spent with him. So maybe not just a specific moment, but endless gratitude for what he's given me for sure.
Yeah, that's, I don't know if I could sum it up better. You know, he's a guy who so many people want to take from him, and he's always trying to get back more, and he always wants to give more. But, you know, I've never obviously been in that position. It must be exhausting sometimes when people are just trying to take, and it feels like maybe you're not getting much as back in return, but he doesn't seem like the person who even wants that or thinks about what am I getting back in return for this. So beautifully said.
Yeah.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you for being here.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Amen. Thank you. All right. Joined now by another one of Dustin Poirier's coaches, Dia Davis. Dia, I know we're just reveling in the aftermath of the fight and everything here, but such a special night on Saturday. Just give me, what's like the first thing that's going to come to your mind when someone asks you about the week of Dustin Poirier's retirement fight?
Leading up to the week, it's been great. You know, the fans have been spectacular. You know, the amount of family that he's had in and the love and the support that has been felt throughout the week, it's been absolutely great. I mean, obviously he didn't get the win, but it seems monumental.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or not as important in the grand scheme of things. Like when you look at his career in a whole, you know, he's done it all. He's been at the highest of the high and, you know, obviously experienced some of the lows, but where he's at and where, what he's walking away with, he's so much more there. A victory last night.
Yeah, for real. What did you think of the fight, though, like itself? Obviously, you know, it's almost inconsequential at this point, but it was a fight. It was a high-level fight and an awesome fight. What did you think of how it all went?
I felt like we needed more volume. You know, he definitely needed to keep up with Max's pace. There were instances in the fight where I was asking him to be first. Or, you know, if he landed a good shot, you got to follow that up. You know, you got to kind of test the waters to see if a guy's hurt. You land a big shot, let's follow it up and see if we can put him away. So yeah, in between rounds, I was definitely asking for more volume. And, you know, after round two, I kind of felt like the fight was getting away from us a little bit. And I was, you know, trying to be instrumental in the corners just to make sure that he was getting information that he needed to go out there and change the direction of the fight.
So you felt it was getting away a little bit even after you almost finished him right towards the end of that round?
Yeah. I mean, even though, you know, he almost finished him in the second,
mm-hmm.
but going into like round three, round four,
yeah,
like the writing was a little bit on the wall. So in order to try to change the trajectory of the fight, and I was trying to get more output from
mm-hmm. What was going through your mind when he dropped Max like that in that like few seconds, and then he jumps the guillotine and he's throwing those elbows so loud, and I'm sure you guys were yelling, he probably couldn't even hear, you know, the ref couldn't even hear the bell, so like wouldn't expect anything, but that moment was insane. I think everyone thought that was gonna be it.
A split second, like, because we didn't hear the bell and the referee jumped in, like,
right,
I didn't know if he was stopping
mm-hmm.
you know, so in that moment I was like, all right, this is good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would have preferred for him to try to go for the finish than go off the guillotine. It wouldn't be a Dustin Poirier if I had a beating.
It's the instinct to pay it. You can't get it out of him. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so you thought, pretty good assessment of the fight. Did you have it, 3-2 then, or 4-1 probably? 3-2? Really? Okay. Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. And you guys watched it back after the fact too, right? Because I know in the immediate aftermath, it did feel closer.
Yeah. But, you know, I try to watch the fight from an unbiased eye, you know, like I'm taking account of what's happening in the fight. And, you know, Max's volume and body work was on display. But like he was busier.
Yeah.
He was getting off and he was mobile. So he was able to get off his shots and then move, get off his shots and move. And it kind of felt like we were almost chasing him a bit. And, not able to get off when he was in position to punch.
Yeah, and I'm sure you study Max plenty coming into this fight. Like, did you see a difference between, like, the Gaethje version of him, the Topuria version, and then now this guy who's, like, fully committed to lightweight and, you know, probably added whatever mass, all that type of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, being that Max has moved up, although he's trying to fill into the weight, which he has well, he still has to be very smart. You know, these guys are bigger guys, so... at any point, you know, You just come off a knockout loss to Poirier at 145. At 55, these guys are going to be punchy, well, if not heavier. So, got to be smart.
And I think Max's game plan for the fight, it worked out perfectly for him.
Yeah. No, he's definitely got to be smart. I mean, he went the most fights in UFC history without being knocked down, and now he's been knocked down in 3 straight fights, right? So you just wonder accumulation of damage and all that stuff. So it's interesting. What was, like, the first thing you said to Dustin when the fight was over, when you guys were in the cage and that whole celebration was popping off?
I think I told him that I'm proud of
it. Yeah. You know, that, like, the win is not important.
No.
In the grand scheme of things, like, I'm just proud of everything that he's done. I'm proud of the person that he's become, and you know, what he continues to intend on doing
with his name and his foundation.
Yeah, I'm always curious too. Like, obviously, the focus is always on him. Like, he's the one retiring, all that stuff. But this is someone for you coaches too that's also kind of leaving your orbit of training and all that stuff. Is that a difficult adjustment for you to make as well? Like, not having his presence there?
Yeah. You know, just leading up to this fight, it's been bittersweet. You know, obviously, we
know that he's had a monumental career and it's coming to an end. But he deserved to see what's on the other side of this. Yeah, like, he's been at this for a very long time. So, you know, bittersweet, but
I'm happy for him.
Yeah. Last thing, and we'll get back to it. What, I'm sure you'll be asked many times, what's your favorite Dustin Poirier memory?
I got a few.
Give them to me.
All right. Top of the list is definitely the second fight with Conor in Abu Dhabi. No, the win was extraordinary. Getting back to the fighter hotel, which is beautiful in itself. When we got there, they played The Boss by James Brown. The entire staff was there, you know, everyone clapping. It was almost like, I mean, I wasn't alive at the time, but if you can picture Muhammad Ali beating George Foreman in Africa, it felt like that. It was that powerful, you know, like I got chills. I damn near welled up, almost Ryan at the moment, because it was such a great moment. My second would have to be the first fight with Gaethje. I thought that he boxed very well, although Gaethje, you know, did hurt him with the low kicks. And I'm not a kickboxing coach, but we did work on something, and that was countering Gaethje's kick.
Yeah,
Gaethje's right low kick. And we worked on countering that with the left hand. And, you know, it took a few rounds, but we finally got him in the fourth round. Yeah, so that was a great moment as well.
Yeah, that was so cool. Then we all had to get back on the charter plane and fly home together like a few hours later. That was a strange time in life, man. Jeez. But that obviously set up one of his biggest paydays in the trilogy and all this good stuff. So here we are. What a time. And yeah, props to Dustin. Props to you for being part of this journey. And yeah, thanks for chatting a little, man. That's been good.
You know, to use Edwards, who anytime you hear that Dustin Poirier is a thug-jitsu fighter, we know the origins of this. What was this week and last night like for you?
Man, it was a lot, because I don't know. I feel like I'm still like a kid at heart.
Right.
And change is a big deal for me, you know? Me retiring was a big deal for me. But like Dustin was like thug-jitsu now. When he said he was going to do that for me, I was like, boom. And then to watch what he did, and then like, now you're thug jitsu. So it's funny because I was with Sebastian Oivides yesterday, and the day of the fight yesterday. And he was watching, which fight was he watching? I think Dustin and Eddie too.
Yeah.
And when they announced Dustin, when Bruce was announcing Dustin as a thug, and he's a thug jitsu fighter, like I literally felt that. Like,
was that the first time?
No, the first time was when he fought Diego Ferreira.
Okay, yeah.
But that was when I retired.
Yeah.
But this time, just hearing it,
gotcha,
again, and knowing that I'm gonna hear that tonight for the last time with Dustin, it was like I've never really felt it before, like I felt it last night. You know, it was always a proud moment, but last night it hurt a little bit, and it's. You know, who doesn't like watching him fight? I just watch him do that all the time, you know? So yeah, like it was kind of bittersweet in that sense.
Yeah. I mean, there's no loss for him. This whole win was such a week, this whole week that he had. But what was going through your mind when he rocked him in round two and it seemed like he might pull that off and then he goes to the McDonald's to you and everything? What were you thinking?
I was thinking so many things, you know? And when I say bittersweet, I'm not even talking about the loss. I'm just talking about him not being here anymore as the guy. But like all those moments, and the first when he got stunned, the way he fought to stay in it.
Yeah.
Right. That just reminded me of who he is and why he took this fight. You know, he knew it was going to be a tough fight. He doesn't want like an easy way out. And that was it right there. You get rocked. Like you take two or three more shots, it's over. Especially with no response, but like, that's not him. That's not in him to like, that's the easy way out. And then like, fighters have all been in that situation, almost all of us, right? And sometimes you want to fight through it, sometimes you can't, and sometimes you just don't. But like, whether he couldn't or his body, that's his instinct.
Right.
That's what happens. He's going to fight back, you know? So that was real. I was real proud to see that. Like, in his last fight, that's still there. That's one of those things that goes away.
Yeah.
And then in the second round, you know, he got stunned again, but then he comes back, and when he rocked Max, it was like, yes, this is about to happen. Then he jumps to Gilly and it's like, he's never had a finish by Gilly in the UFC. We're going to see that for the first time in his last fight. This is going to be amazing. But you know, Max knew what he was doing. He was able to get away. So, but it was, I was super excited, man, especially at that moment. But like for the whole night, for the whole week, it's weird. It's weird. Like just being attached to Dustin's story. It's, You feel so much more a part of it. You feel it so much more.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's almost like it's your story. Like he's so relatable and he's what so many people want to be like. Like when you, so I told this to a couple people today. Like yes, last night after the fight, somebody wanted to take a picture with me, right? Somebody recognized me. I was like, that's cool. Appreciate it. A little down on my face because I wanted him to win this last fight, you know? And I pull it together and I'm like, you know, and he's like, oh man, what's wrong? I was like, no, just the fight, just the result. It's just, I'm just disappointed, but I'm still happy. And he's like, oh man, you don't be disappointed, man. You guys, you know, like, cause like, now you guys dust it. He's like, oh man, you're just as, I don't know, remember the word he used, but there's Dustin. It's like, man, I feel you and I appreciate that, but if I was as amazing as Dustin, I would be Dustin. That dude's special. You know what I mean? And it's I've told him before, man, he inspires me and I just want to take it all in and then just go to the next steps. And I know our friendship is going to continue. So it's just one of those things where it's like, I don't get to watch you do what you do best, but like, second best thing you are is my friend. So let's go.
Exactly. For like, I guess the short story for people who may not know how you two met, can you give us the quick version of that? The origins.
Yeah. No, I was doing a film down here and Never Back Down 2 in Baton Rouge, right?
Shout out. Love it.
And Dustin was working on the film. Didn't know him yet, but it was up in Baton Rouge. And I called Tim Crate and I was like, I know I'm close to Lafayette, but I don't know how close. Hey, man. I'm in Louisiana. What's going on? He's like, man, you're in Baton Rouge. I'm not coming up there, but I have this kid who teaches a kickboxing class up there for me. I'm gonna get him to bring you down to my house. So I rode down with Dustin. We started talking. He was telling me about his WEC fight with Costello, with Danny Castillo. And I was like, all right, cool. I didn't really know Dustin, but Tim also gave him some props to me. So all that ride down, we talked. I was like, oh, I like this guy. He's like, I want to come out to Austin. He came out to Austin, train. He used to train with Frankie and Edson Barbosa at the time, but he still came out to Austin and trained with me a little. And man, we were kickboxing one day and he was just touching me up. I was like, this is not fun. So I just like started shooting shots, taking him down. And I pretty much could take him down at will, you know? And I was like, yeah, man, I'd love to keep training with you. And you should come down to ATT, man. There's a lot of bodies down there. It'll be good for you. And he came down eventually and I loved it. He stayed down. That he built his reputation there. And but like a couple of years, like maybe 3 or 4 years later, I feel like it was a group with me, Rashid Magomedov, Gleason Tebow, and Dustin, you know, in a 4-man group, and we're just wrestling. And like I didn't score on Dustin one time. And I got beat up but I was probably the group a low man on totem pole wrestling wise. Okay. Because Dustin just like grew and surpassed me, but like him and Rashid Magomedov, they were battling it out, and And it was just like, just one of those things, man, just watching him grow like skills as a man in the sport, the name he's built. It's just, it's been a fun thing to be able to see from this perspective. Like, I enjoyed it.
Last thing, what's your favorite Dustin Poirier memory moment?
There's a lot of them, right?
Yeah.
Narrow it down. Give us one or two.
Inside the cage or out?
One of each. How about?
Oh, okay. I'm gonna keep
each, yeah.
I'll try to make sure I got a good PG one.
I'm
just kidding.
We're open ended here.
No, but inside the cage, though, my favorite Dustin moment really was the Joe Duffy fight. Well, you know, when his face is busted and like that's I feel like that was one of those moments where if you have an idea what this is all about, you really see who Dustin is, where it's like, it doesn't matter how hard this gets, doesn't matter how much this hurts. If I'm still alive and I'm able to fight, I'm fucking fighting you. Right. And like Joe busted his nose and then he fought back and he did well at the end of the round. It's like, yeah, this is what you're in for. Like, you're not taking, and that moment to me, that's what that said to me about him, you know, like you have to kill me. And I appreciate that. Shoot, there's a lot of personal moments too, but I think the biggest one, the best one, the biggest one that means the most to me was my last fight week. Fight was in Austin. He comes with me to Austin to cut weight and corner, and at one point I went to go for a bike ride, 20 miles I think it was, to go ride out, ride back in. And on the way out, there was a park bench. We stopped and sat for a minute. We were just chilling, talking. And then he just brought it up out of nowhere. He's like, hey man, would you be okay with me being announced as a Thug Jitsu fighter? Right? And I was like, it was kind of one of those things. I wasn't expecting him to ask me to say anything. We were just talking. And I was just like, kind of take you by surprise. And it's like, fuck, that's kind of dope if you do that. You know, I appreciate that. And and just that transition right there, for me, that was a big deal, man. The fact that, I don't know. I don't feel like I've done anything for Dustin. Maybe he feels like I have. I don't feel like I have. He's my friend, of course. And so just being together is good for me. But to look at Thug Jitsu or even... And for what I've done and to like want to carry on something that I brought out is like, that's a big deal. It's a feeling I can't explain, but it feels good, you know, and I appreciate that. And then also to see what he's done with it. It's like, wow, man. Wow. You know, so I don't know. I don't really know how to explain the feelings, but it's like it feels good and I'm happy. I'm happy for him, and I'm disappointed I'm not going to get to see him do that at that level anymore, but it's like, that's what video is for. But I appreciate him, man, and I'm excited to see. I'm just excited to see where we are in 20 years and anything after that, and watch the sport grow because of, you know, kids. Last thing I was saying, but like I said something to somebody, and it's crazy. Mickey Gall said it to me once. He's like, man, to have the career you had, I would like, you know, I'd kill for that. And I'm like, I appreciate that, Mickey. And like, now I can see it, like from Dustin's, when I think about me, it's like, I'm me. I'm with me every day, all the time. To me, I'm just me, you know, I wet my own ass. So I'm not special as far as I'm concerned, you know? So, but like, I appreciate it when Mickey said it. I understand it. And watching it from this perspective of Dustin, it's like, man, there are tons of kids. There are little kids. There are teenagers who've been doing this for a while. There are young fighters who are like they would love to be Dustin. And it's like, I appreciate that.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
No, 1,000,000%. Man. People can say whatever they want about, you know, the 0-3 and undisputed title fights and stuff like that. 99.9% of MMA fighters won't fight for a world title one time, let alone three times. So, like, you know, putting it's all about perspective. So, and as you said, that person who stopped you on the street and maybe compared careers, said that maybe you're a legendary or whatever, like, you were very important for building the foundation for fighters like Dustin, too. So, give yourself that credit as well. He's a good man.
I appreciate you, White. My man.
Thanks for being here. All right, and closing things out here on the bonfire, we've had your friends, your teammates, had Pablito even on the damn show today, Dustin. We're giving everyone the exposure. I know a million times you got asked leading up to the fight, what's it going to feel like to retire in the day after? We're at the day after. How does it feel today?
I feel content. I feel content and happy with my career.
wish last night would have went a little bit different, but that's fighting, and I really had a good time out there, enjoyed the love, appreciated everybody, sending all the positive energy. You know, it's been an incredible journey, incredible career. What an experience. I got to learn so much in these years of fighting. I'm just thankful.
Yeah, for real, man. I know you spoke at the press conference, like, you know, hadn't seen the fight then. You felt what it was like to be in the eye of the hurricane, right? And you came back here with your boys, watched the fight back. What was it like watching that compared to being in there?
Yeah, going through the fight and immediately my thoughts about what just happened, it was like, I thought I did enough. I thought I did. And then I got back and I watched it, you know, like what you're feeling and going through in there. Mm-hmm. And then what you see as a fool from an outside view is two different things. I can see him winning rounds, throwing more volume, landing body shots, pulling away in rounds, you know. So what I watched was different than what I felt.
Mm. What do you feel you won? What rounds do you think you won?
I'd have to go back, but I thought the second round, I think the fourth round, I didn't write it down.
No, those are the ones I think is the consensus. Like, those are the two I thought you won from saying there. I haven't had the chance to watch it back either, but obviously the second was insane, but you had him so close to the finish, and I thought you just did more in the fourth. And then I did think it was 2-2 in there, but again, like, I'm sitting there cage side. It's the same as the judges, right, man? You get one angle. You don't get the benefit of replay, all this stuff. Like, you get one shot to write that scorecard down, especially when you're those judges. I thought he was hitting your arms a lot and you were blocking a lot of shit.
Yeah, a lot of elbows, a lot of forearms.
Yeah.
But he did land a bunch of good cross body, a bunch of good body kicks.
You both landed a lot. I mean, it was, do you feel like, you know, we talk so much, you're like, I just want a war. Like, you want to feel like you fought a final fight, right? And that, do you feel like you got everything you needed to get out in the final fight in terms of like competing?
Yeah. And I just wanted one more battle. And he gave it to me. You know, I think in there, I felt like in between rounds talking to my boxing coach, I could have took more chances, but I was trying to protect myself at the same time. And I never really fought like that before. You know, I would always put myself in harm's way to land the big shots. And this one, I didn't. And maybe that's a sign that the decision I made was the right one.
Why? Any idea why that could have been? Is it just knowing, like, not wanting to get maybe finish brutally in your last fight or anything like that, or self-preservation,
get home to my family safe, that type of thing.
Yeah, it's completely fair, man. I still thought it was such a great fight, though. Fight of the night would have been warranted, and I've said this to a few people today, like, you are tied right now for most fight of the night bonuses in UFC history with Edson Barboza. You would have separated, and that would have been a cool thing, because then we could sit here and be like, you are definitively the most exciting fighter in UFC history. You have the boss.
Yeah, bro, that would have been great to have that number one spot at most fight of the nights, because that's a tough one to get. A lot of these stats, longevity stats, you know, people are going to reach them, but to have the most fight of the nights, that's a special one. And that 50k doesn't hurt.
Yeah, for real. What did you just think of Max's approach to the fight compared to maybe what you trained for?
I thought he fought very smart laterally, man. He didn't move front and back like he did in the second fight, so my switch stance, covering distance, overhand wasn't really there. My follow-up shots weren't really there, and also I thought I threw not enough combinations. I threw one, two punches, you know, and it was because his lateral movement. If I would have thrown more than two punches when he's moving laterally, I would have been chasing him and off balance, and I would have been there to get countered. So he just fought a really smart fight, man. It's a high-level fight when you're in there with that guy.
When you watched it back and you saw that second-round sequence of dropping him and going for the guillotine, like, what did you think actually being outside and watching that from in?
I was like, man, maybe I should have. The time was short. You know, it might have been like 10 seconds, 8 seconds left when I jumped the guillotine. Maybe I should have threw more punches and tried to, you know, because he was hurt. Maybe one more shot lands, he's done. But that short of time, he kind of grabbed my ankles and his neck was there, and I had to jump one more.
Mm-hmm. How, like, do you even care about the fight sitting here too much today? Like, or is it just the experience you went through? Like, I don't know. How do you feel on a Sunday compared to other fights in your career digesting?
I mean, losing sucks. You know, I had a long training camp. I wanted to win. But it's easier to process knowing that this doesn't affect my ranking. It doesn't affect my – moves me further from a title shot. Doesn't, you know, those things don't matter now that I'm retired. Of course, I wanted to win, but I'm not thinking about the other stuff that comes along with the loss. Like, I got to fight myself back into position and all that stuff.
in hindsight, like how the whole week of just like all the emotional shit that came your way, like is, do you feel like you handled it as well as you could have?
Yeah, I really felt like I was in the moment as much as I could be this week. It was a lot of people, you know, a lot of interviews, a lot of phone calls, a lot of Zoom calls. It was a lot of media.
You know.
But I did feel the love from the company, the city, the fans, and the media. You know, I felt like they made me feel like I accomplished a lot in the sport this week.
Yeah. I'm curious, how do you think like your perspective on just like being the media, connection with the media changed? Because I remember after the second Conor fight, like we did that first interview after you knocked him out. And like, I think one of the questions I asked you is just like, what has been the difference in like the attention? And like, you got all these followers and sponsorships and stuff. And you're like, I don't care about any of that shit. Like, this is all extra right. to me. But it seems like you embraced it a little more. Like, do you feel like you evolved in that side over the latter part?
Yeah, I just allowed myself to kind of step to the side and look at the body of work that I've done over the years. So I was like more in like an appreciative mindset, because I never really do that. I'm always like, what's the next fight? How can I get better? I never sit back and say, wow, I did do a lot or come a long way in the sport. I never like look at it from that point of view. So this week really made me do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was your favorite part of the aftermath of the fight? Like, there's so many greetings inside the cage, outside the cage, backstage. You and Max have some cool moments. Is there one thing that might stick with you the most?
I mean, just probably the thing that sticks with me the most is the love for the love from the company.
Yeah.
Like, UFC made me feel like they appreciated me fighting these years for them. They went above and beyond with all the special video packages they did during the broadcast and the retirement video at the end. It felt special. It really did. But also, man, how humble Max is and how, you know, he's such a good person behind the scenes. I don't know if the cameras got all the stuff that was said, but he told me he wanted to donate his gloves to my foundation so we can auction them off with my fight kit. I mean, that's huge. And he's doing stuff in Hawaii now too with charities and nonprofits, and he asked if maybe we could work together, and that would be amazing. I would love to do something in Hawaii.
Yeah. Did he do that last fight too? Give you the gloves? Or was there something?
The last fight in Atlanta, he gave me the gloves to auction off with my fight kit.
Man.
So just a real stand-up guy. You know, even after the fight, he was telling me, thanks. He kept telling me, thank you for the opportunity. And I'm like, bro, what are you talking about? You're the champ. Thank you for the opportunity to get in here and try to win this belt off your waist. But he kind of explained, I think he was talking about the series.
Yeah.
That's what he was talking about. But still, man, him coming to Louisiana and allowing me to fight for his BMF title, it was at the end of the day, it's thank him for putting it on the line.
Yeah, I get what he's saying there. I mean, like, I was talking to Mike Brown here earlier, and he was like, you know, if you'd lost the second Conor fight, you're never getting that third chance, most likely, right? Like, it's very rare in 0-2 where you get that. But you didn't really have the options, right? Like, this is the fight they presented to you. It's not like they gave you three fights.
No, this is the fight you actually wanted.
Yeah, so it's more their call, and you got that opportunity. So that was great. But yeah, it was very funny watching you guys react to no fight of the night and back there. And
I thought for sure, you know, when you're in there, it feels like you're getting hit with shots. Oh, shit, he dropped me. Boom, I dropped him. It feels like it's a war. But I didn't go back. I haven't watched the whole card. Maybe there were some wars on the fight card.
There were some good fights, but dude, you guys landed 300 combined significant strikes in there. Like, knocked each other down once. You don't get stuff like this very often. So I don't know. I said, as to Dana at the press conference, I was like, that fight too is pretty damn good. On top of the Holland fight and Dana Rodriguez, that was awesome.
What did Dana say about that?
He just said, he was like, oh yeah, like that was great too.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, fair play. Those guys, you know, can use the 50K and stuff, but I would love to have seen that, as we said, the most fight of the night bonuses.
For sure. For sure.
Record. That would have been.
That's a tough one to beat.
Yeah. That would have been pretty cool. Yeah. It's just, what do you think you'll remember most about this week when people ask you these questions in a few years?
Just how the state and the city came out to support. You know, I saw so many war hats in the crowd, so many Poirier shirts. I felt that the walkout, it was like deafening. In the second round when I dropped him, was it second round?
Yeah.
When I dropped him, I was throwing elbows. It was so loud, I didn't even hear the bell. You know, I didn't hear the buzzer go off. The referee didn't even hear it because the cage door was open and people were coming in, and I was still, you know, it was just so loud and crazy in there. The support was unreal.
Well, dude, and I think what Dana said at the press conference too, he was asked if like the success of this event could turn New Orleans into one of those cities like, you know, Salt Lake, like Newark, like Miami,
right,
getting an event every year. And he said like, that's something we're going to have to look really hard at. So, I mean, you brought this here, you made this happen to the point they can see how good this was and how much the city embraced it. I mean, would that just be another W on your checklist if you could get the UFC to come here every year, second year, and further allow the sport of mixed martial arts to grow in the state?
Of course. You know, I would love to be part of the reason why they return here often or regularly on their schedule. But New Orleans is an incredible city. This the soul of the city. You feel it when you land and get out into the city. The food's great. The music's great. The culture, you know, people are friendly here. And like the governor said, Jeff Landry said, I think he might have tweeted or put on Instagram, he said New Orleans is a hosting city. You know, you guys need to come back. And I have a feeling they will come back here.
What do you think when you look at the round one sequence when he dropped you? Like, was that your bad that you didn't see something coming? Was he sneaky with the shot? He didn't open as fast?
He was doing a good job of kind of changing the tempo and changing the speed on his attacks. He would throw the first two or three punches at a certain speed and then follow up with a different speed. He's crafty. He's tricky, man. And I don't know if it's getting older or something, but a couple times, a couple combinations he threw in the fight, I would see the first few punches and I would lose track of the last one until it hit me. You know, I'd even see it. Maybe that was his technique, you know, his skills of hiding stuff, or maybe it was my years of fighting. I don't know. But damn, Max is good. He's a champ. And, you know, I landed some good shots on him last night. So I was wondering if the Ilya fight was going to really have an effect on him, but he felt, man, he took some shots.
Well, I'm curious, and this is more me asking you from the analyst side as opposed to the fighter. Like, this is a guy who was never knocked down for a record, I think, like 29 UFC fights. And now he's been knocked down in 3 straight fights and was knocked down, you know, or knocked out, obviously, by Ilya.
Right.
As the analyst, what would you look at that as? Is it just obviously he's fighting 3 insane hitters in a row, or?
I mean, I have a lot of finishes. Gaethje has a lot of finishes. Obviously, Ilya's knocking everybody out back to back. Could just be a bad run. Could be time catching up. We'll see. You know, as he continues, we'll see. It's tough to say because everybody's so different. Genetics are different. You know, it's just, it's a wild thing to try to pinpoint. But if he starts getting hurt with shots we know would never hurt him 3 years ago, then we can make that conclusion. I think it's still too early. You know, we need to see him in a few more fights.
Yeah. What do you think a fight between him and Ilya would look like again at lightweight now? Obviously, you know, Ilya has been hitting everyone. I know you've been high as him on anyone or as anyone and praised him. How do you think that fight is at lightweight?
I think Max would have to change up his approach to the fight. You know, use his lateral footwork like he did with me. Stay on the bike. Uses length, but man, if Ilya lands on anybody, like I said, at anybody from 145 to 170, if he lands clean, I think he puts guys out.
Yeah, that would be an interesting rematch.
Maybe Max has a little bit more durability at 55, coming in a little bit healthier, a little bit more hydrated on fight night. Maybe that could play a little bit into him taking, being able to absorb the shots, but we'll see. I don't know. Is that the fight they're going to make?
I don't know. Dana was asked about that. He said, you know, we don't make matches on Saturday, maybe on Tuesday. But he also was presented like Charles Oliveira, maybe a rematch with him and Max for the BMF. Well, Ilya maybe fights like, you know, Gaethje or Armin or whoever. That would be an interesting one, Max and Charles again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be a fun one to watch. If Max takedown defense holds up, I think Max does beat him on the feet. So we'll see. I'm definitely a fan, so I'll be watching every fight.
Yeah. Obviously being like almost 24 hours is the time we're recording this since the fight, there's been so many messages. I know you'd be like on your phone trying to go through some stuff. Is there one that stood out? I mean, I thought Islam Makhachev sent a really nice, you know, congratulations to you and the awesome career. And I think he said in a quote before the fight, like, you guys text sometimes and he's always giving you a shout out. Is that nice to, you know, see that? And I guess how much do you and Islam actually communicate behind the scenes?
Yeah, we've messaged a couple times. Nothing crazy. It's not like we're talking all the time.
Yeah.
But it's cool to see respect from your former opponents. You know, I've seen a few people put up stuff, like John Anik put some stuff out. Mm-hmm. I saw John Jones say something. Izzy was coming out saying stuff. So it's just cool to see like peers in the community or people you love watching fight show respect, man. This whole week has been kind of not mind blowing, but it's just been kind of overwhelming with the love and support of people throughout the sport that I look up to. So I appreciate everyone.
Yeah. Wouldn't change a thing though, right? Like if you wouldn't remove that pressure for a retirement fight, if you could do it all over again, you would still like to do it the same way.
Yeah. Honestly, like this week, the media and all that stuff was a lot, but besides that, it didn't change anything. You know, we could have been anywhere in the world. I would have fought the same fight.
Yeah. Were you aware that they did like those interviews with your daughter and Jolie and all that stuff for that big feature? And
no, when they asked me to go to the studio to sit down and do something, they were like, just trust me, it's going to be worth it. Just come in. We got to film some stuff for the opener or something. It was some video package they wanted to do. Had no clue. My wife didn't tell me. Yeah. So like seeing my mom talk, seeing my daughter talk, you know, that stuff's good thing. It wasn't like fight week. That was a few weeks before before the fight, but, just hit you in the heart, man.
Yeah. I mean, I saw media day, they really put you through the shit. And I tried to at least like put you back on track at the press conference. And right. I was like, I had to be the tough
dad. I'm not going to read all these letters. I have her in my room now. Everybody who wrote me a letter, and I'm going to get it framed and put it in my gym or something. You know, those letters were from people who I've been with for years and years. And, you know, their opinion means something to me. So just seeing them talk about the past and some of the journey they were on with me through this fight stuff is, I want to keep it.
For sure. How are you feeling just physically right now?
Busted up a little bit. My right knee's hurt. My hips hurt. My ribs hurt. You know, Max went to town with the body kicks, good crosses to my body. My elbows hurt. And both of my right hand and my left wrist, you know, I got all kinds of stuff going on.
Mm-hmm. You felt worse after fights?
Oh yeah, yeah. I felt worse.
Yeah. Is it, are you excited to not have to feel this way again though?
I'm sure I'm going to miss it. You know, I'm sure I'm going to miss it. But today I kind of woke up feeling relieved, like a little bit of weight off my back. I'm not worried about what's next. I'm not worried about what's the next opponent. What's how many days can I eat what I want before I have to start stepping on the scale and getting back in shape? You know, I could just live a healthy lifestyle and see what weight I'm going to be at, you know, and it's we'll see. You know, it's still the first day.
Yeah. Where do you think you weigh right now? Do you know what you were in the cage?
I showed up to the fight night 170 pounds, which is light for me, but I came in this week very, very light. I wouldn't be surprised if Max was heavier than me. I was 170 pounds.
Yeah. I mean, he came later to the scale. I know you used the 1 pound and he didn't. You were 156. Yeah. So yeah.
But I had on the sweatpants, glasses, true, a hat. Like, I was 155 on the dot when I left here and when I checked my weight.
Well, and you're allowed to be 156. Like,
yeah.
Tough fight, so yeah. There's no, you know, take it where you can get it. Obviously, that's the way.
And I wasn't close to, like, I could have been 152, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you said you could have done 45. I hope not.
Pushing it, but I probably could have, yeah.
Is that the worst weight cut you ever done? Was at the Cub Swanson fight?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the worst. That's the most weight I ever moved in a week.
Yeah. That's, what was it, 37 pounds, I think?
No, 30. I showed up 176 and weighed in 146.
Freaking crazy. I mean, that was, I remember, like, I spoke to Rob Rivetto on the podcast last week and we were kind of going down memory lane a little bit. And he was just talking about when you got that first call to fight Crispy to go to featherweight. Like, oh, yeah. It was short notice. They were a little bit worried. And
I never made 45 in my life when they called too.
Yeah, never again though. 45 or 55.
Yeah, I'll never be 155 pounds again, man.
When do you think is it going to be hard for you to go back into a gym at some point?
No. Me and the family are going to go on vacation next week. I take all my family, go stay at a house on the beach and just relax. You know, it's almost like a family reunion. But as soon as I get back from that, I'm back, you know, running, and I'm back at my buddy's gym every week, open mat, hitting mitts, doing all, you know, rolling, and I'm right back.
Yeah. Last thing here, like speaking to everyone I have here, Mike Brown, Pablito, all that stuff, kind of the common theme, especially from what your man Pablito said, like just the selflessness that you seem to have. Where do you think that came from? Because I've experienced this with you too, Dustin. I know you've talked to me before and, you know, said, and I hope you don't mind me sharing this, it feels like in the position you've had to be in through your career, it's always people wanting to take from you.
And I hope you don't feel this way with this interview right now.
Man, like, you've been hanging out all day.
But like, you know, that's what it's being, right? Like, you're in a position where you have to give so much, and it seems like you don't ever expect or want anything back. What do you think? Like, where does that come from? Where is that character trait being instilled in you?
I'm not, you know, I can't really pinpoint it, but it was just the right time when I heard some news about a police officer who lost his life close to where me and my wife grew up. I was in the middle of packing all my stuff, and I was in the middle of packing my computer room up where I had so many shorts and gloves from previous fights over the years. And when I read the article and my wife shared the stuff with me, it was like we were actually packing up my house to move back to Louisiana, packing up a U-Haul. My daughter was just born, and I was like, hey, maybe we can sell some of these gloves. And that just kind of sparked the whole thing, and it just grew from there, So it's really, I'm not sure where it really, really came from, but the moment it came was what I just said.
Okay, interesting. So you don't feel like, you know, when you were a younger kid, you had as much of that? Maybe you had to grow into being that?
My mother, you know, my house was a foster home growing up, so maybe that could have planted a seed too. You know, I'm sure a lot of things.
Yeah, seeing a lot of people struggle.
Yeah.
I guess on that note, when are you planning on putting up the auction info, and where can people find all that stuff, and how, you know, can they support the Good Fight Foundation as you go on? Because I know you said with post-fighting career, you're going to have to find different ways to, you know, continue the means and all that stuff. So tell the people.
Right. Yeah. I want this thing to keep growing and keep going. Max offered to donate his gloves to get auctioned off, so that's an incredible help for the next goals. You know, the big ones are the backpack drive and the Thanksgiving drive and the Christmas toys for the shelters around Lafayette. So we have a few things that happen every year that are, you know, we're going to have to raise money for. But my retirement fight kit will be up for auction next week, and I'll post a link. The Good Fight Foundation will post a link. I'll share all the info. But it'll just be an auction. But I think one of my buddies told me that Theo Vaughn was saying he wanted to buy it. Don't put it up for auction. So I need to find out what's going on with everything.
Yeah, I'm sure Theo could probably outbid anyone else out there on the public forums. So man, what a guy he is. I was watching him. He was directly across the cage from me the whole fight. And anytime he landed something, he was exploding out of his seat. Do you see any of that stuff outside the cage?
Not in the cage.
No. You're just so laser focused. Yeah, it's very dark outside of there, right? With the lighting.
For sure. Yeah. It's like you're locked in a room. You don't really see. Every now and then between, if I'm walking, like the bell rings, I'm walking back to my run, my corner, I'll see like the first couple people on the row who's directly behind my chair where I'm walking to. But unless he's sitting right there behind my stool, I'm not going to see him.
Yeah. Well, the first question I asked Dana White at the press conference when he came was, Dustin Poirier is surely a UFC Hall of Famer, right? And he basically said yes. You know, not as definitive as I would have liked him to be, but I think that's happening, man. I know that's important to you. So no doubt that day will come. And I mean, you're going to be in the individual wing. The Dan Hooker fight will be in the fight wing at some point, probably some others. So you're going to get your shine.
I always had a feeling, man. Me and one of my buddies always talk about that. It was like that Dan Hooker fight. I think that's going to go into the Hall of Fame. So whether it's me or that fight, or I just want pieces of my journey for sure to be in there so I can have that forever.
It'll be both. I would be absolutely shocked. And if the day came where you got a solo, who do you think would induct you? Who do you want to be that person?
Oh, I have no clue.
Yeah.
No clue.
There's too many options. I know. We won't put you on.
There's so many legends, man.
Yeah. Well, Dustin, I really appreciate it. I mean, personally speaking, we're going to talk many more times, so I don't want to do like an emotional outro here. Hopefully many more appearances on the bonfire here. People have loved your breakdowns and stuff, but just how much you've done for me in my career, and you know, it's been so exciting to be there on your ride watching everything you've done. It's really special, man. I'm happy you can sit here today and have closure, because that's the most important thing.
Thanks. Yeah, man, I feel like I said, I'm really content with the decision I made to retire, and my whole career, just thankful for, like, I know I keep saying the same stuff over, but it's true. I'm in a place of gratitude. I'm thankful for the journey and everything I've learned on this dream chasing over the years. You know, I was a young kid who made a life for him and his family through chasing a dream. Never was it work one day. It was always passion, man. And I'm thankful for that.
And that's how I feel sitting here recording this podcast. This is passion. This is not work. So respect to that. Everyone else, you should be chasing that in your lives as well as possible. So use this man as the inspiration he has been. Dustin, can't thank you enough. And I will be right back to wrap things up.
And that does it for another episode of the Bonfire Podcast. What can I say? That was just incredible stuff from everyone. We had apologies for a couple of the uneven audios on there. Had a couple of troubleshooting issues and technical issues with a few of the folks, but we got it done for Dustin. And tried to smooth it over as best as I could and make it a good listen for you guys, but appreciate the support, appreciate Dustin, everyone else. I'm getting ready to go home back to Toronto after a week here in New Orleans. What an incredible experience. I hope the UFC, as Dana White said, post-fight after Saturday's event, plans to come here often. This would be an incredible annual stop. What a great fight city this has been. I think Dustin bringing the show here, as I said to him, has sparked something for the UFC. So I'd love to see things continue to progress in this market, because it is definitely one of the funner ones and more enjoyable ones that I've experienced, not only from the city perspective, but fans, all that type of stuff. So please leave your thoughts on this episode in the comments, hit me up directly, whatever it may be. This was a lot of fun and this was special, and can't thank once again Dustin, Mike, everyone else who joined the show. It means a lot to me, and until next week, I will see you back here by the Bonfire.